from the Duck South Studios in Morgan City, Mississippi.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
I want to punch you in the face so bad right now.
This is the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
Get the governor a harumph.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Today's episode is brought to you by Advantage Multi from Bayer. Advantage Multi is veterinarians' number one choice in the prevention of heartworms, fleas, roundworms, hookworms, and whipworms. Treats and controls sarcoptic mange. Make sure your dog is protected by using Advantage Multi.
I said what I said and I'll stand by it to the death.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
And now, here are your hosts, J. Paul Jackson.
You just love to hear yourself talk, don't you? Even when you're not saying anything.
Rocky LaFleur.
Yo, Adrian! Adrian!
Houston Kennedy.
Please, Houston, we have a problem.
And Josh Webb.
Coons! Well, raccoon's trying to get on our back porch. Mama just chased him off with a broom.
Welcome to the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com. Hi, I'm J. Paul Jackson. I'll be your host today, along with my co-host, the amazing Rocky LaFleur from Mossy Island Outfitters and the Morgan City Duck South Studios. Today, we're also really fortunate to be joined by a guest co-host. This guy knows more about duck hunting than, probably has forgotten more about duck hunting than most of us will ever know. He's a heck of a duck caller, a cut-down duck call expert, Mr. Roland Cortez. Roland, it's a pleasure to have you join us today, man. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Jay Paul, and it's a pleasure to be on the show today.
You know, for those of you who are not acquainted with Roland, Roland is a duck guide with Arkansas County Duck Guides outside of Stuttgart. But listening to your voice, Roland, it's pretty obvious that you are not from Arkansas County. I detect a little bit of coon ass in there. Would that be right?
And you are correct, J. Paul. I am from Thibodaux, Louisiana.
Cool, man. Well, it's a pleasure to have you on here. And Rocky, it's great to have you too, brother. Good to be back on
yes.
with you.
Yeah, bud. Hey, you know what's cool about that part of the world is I played college basketball with a young man from, it was outside of Lafayette, Roland. And anyway, I'll never forget going home with him one weekend from college. And anyway, we walked in one of his friend's house, and I kid you not, they had a baby, like a one-year-old infant, or not. So a one-year-old wouldn't be an infant. It'd be a toddler, I guess. But they had a one-year-old at the house, one and a half. And I kid you not, the bottle ran out as we were walking in the door, and I was watching them prepare the bottle, and they put beer in the bottle. Is that unusual, or is that?
No, I've heard stories about that. I can't recollect my parents ever doing that to me, but I've heard stories. I've heard it makes them babies sleep well.
I would imagine that a child that had that happen wouldn't remember a whole lot either.
That's correct.
Yeah, I mean I've used Benadryl, but I've never used beer. I guess start them early because look, my best friend from down there that I played basketball with, he could drink us under the table back in college. I mean, absolutely. Two things that part of the world is known for: the great food, and man, you can put the beer away. Good Lord.
And I'm glad you brought up the great food part too. Roland, tell me, I'm sure you cook, don't you?
Yes, sir. I cook pretty good.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that's kind of a hallmark of the culture in Louisiana, particularly Cajun culture in particular. You know, in our part of the world, I mean, where I grew up in West Tennessee, most of the time, almost all the cooking was done by the women. But you go down there in your part of the world, you know, down on the bayou, I mean, the men do a huge amount of the cooking, and a lot of times they're the best cooks in the household.
And that's true, J. Paul. You know, my mother, bless her heart, you know, she's a great cook. But my daddy, you know, he's just as good as a cook as her.
What's your signature dish?
If I had to pick, my best dish would probably be smothered squirrels.
Wow. I'd like to try that.
Hey, how do you prepare, Roland? Roland, just summarize how you prepare it real quick, if you don't mind.
I don't. You know, we'll take you about 11 squirrels, which is about 8. You know, cut them up, parcel them. Cut you up maybe 8, 9, 10 onions. Get you a black iron skillet pot. Put you a little grease in it. And, you know, you kind of what some people call you kind of ball your squirrels. You know, you put water in it. You cook it down first with your grease. Then you put water in it and cook your onions down. And what it does is it just, after you cook it for a few hours, it kind of tenders up the squirrels to where they kind of fall off the bone after, you know, a couple hours, you know.
Wow, that sounds awesome. And then I guarantee you add a little all-purpose flour somewhere in there and thicken it up and make either a roux or gravy. Would I be right?
Correct. And after you cook it down enough, you know, like I said, you put your seasonings, you put your Tony Satran, you put your Louisiana hot sauce, and maybe add a little salt and pepper to it, and you just cook it down. And after a while, it makes kind of like a gravy at the bottom, and you know, you take you some rice, and you just pour it on top of the rice.
Roland, I've got a question. I want to ask you something. What? And there's going to be a lot of people listening to this, but you know, what's the proper way to prepare a good roux for a gumbo? Tell me how you do that.
Oh, man, the proper way is to cook flour. You know, you take your flour and you put it in a black iron skillet, but making the proper roux for a gumbo, you know, if you burn it, it's no good. Then you have to start from scratch, man. And it's something hard for me to explain. You know, you add you some salt, some pepper, you add a little Tony Satran, and you kind of just got to watch your roux. You got to keep on turning that roux, you know, with a spoon, and you know, hopefully it doesn't burn it, and it'll turn a good brownish color. And once it turns to that brownish color, you know, your roux's done.
You know, you got to have good judgment of whether you've undercooked it or overcooked it. You see so many you see so many people preparing a gumbo straight out of a box now. Nobody really, my mom, she still prepares a gumbo from start to finish, but you see so many people, you know, coming straight out of a box, and, you know, be a lot learned here today.
Now, if I'm crunched on time, there's some people around here that make, you know, kind of make that box roux, and it's actually, you know, pretty good. But, you know, preparing a proper roux takes time, you know, and in today's world, nobody really has time anymore to make the proper roux. But when you cook a gumbo with a homemade roux, you'll see why people still do it.
Oh, it makes all the difference in the world.
Oh,
you know, and
all the difference, J. Paul.
Rocky, a few years ago, and Roland, I had the pleasure of being in duck camp down near Gaydon with Chef Jared Tease. And Chef Tease, Jared, he started out with John Besh. And no, actually, I think he started out at Commander's Palace with the Brennan family and then worked with Besh. And Jared's out on his own now. But Jared showed us how to make a proper roux in the kitchen there. At the Duck Club, and it took him, I mean, he spent half an hour almost on it. First, he did a combination of real butter and oil, and he said he added the oil because the burning point of butter is much lower, and that just raised the burning point a little bit, but he didn't want to lose that butter flavor. And then he came back in and added in his flour, and then he stood there with a wooden spoon, and he stirred that flour in oil, cooking that flour, like you said, constantly. And, you know, his admonition to all of us watching was, if it ever turns darker than the color of a light peanut butter, you've ruined it. You want it
Correct.
To be just a real light peanut butter color and keep that heat on low. Don't rush it. You know, Rocky, you asked when it was done. He said it was done when you'd been doing it for at least 10 minutes, whisking it or stirring it continually, and it was no darker than the color of light peanut butter. And if you went any darker than that, you might as well throw it out and start all over again. And that was his room.
And for some reason, Jay Paul, that wooden spoon makes it taste better.
You better believe it. You know, I've been and the cast iron skillet. I converted
to
cast iron cooking a decade ago, and now I've got a kitchen full of it. And you're right, Roland. I mean, something about a wooden spoon and cast iron, man, if you're making a gravy, and you know, you've been a couple nights ago, I fried some pork chops and then made a sawmill gravy to go over them, and you take that wooden spoon and you scrape the stuff that stuck to the bottom of that iron skillet, like in your squirrel recipe a while ago. Scrape the bottom of that skillet while you're making your gravy. Damn, man, that's hard to beat.
That's some good stuff.
Yeah, so, well, now that we're all hungry, let's talk a little bit. I'm starving. I'm ready to go to lunch now.
You're not kidding. I haven't eaten lunch either.
Yeah. I got something before we end here I want to hear a take from you, Rocky. And you usually spring some stuff on me. I'm fixing to spring something on you and Roland here in a minute. But so I'm going to ask you guys, do we want to go into duck talk or do you want to hear the topic of the day? What you want to do first?
I want to hear the topic of the day.
That'll work with me, Rocky.
All right, guys. I was looking this morning about 6 o'clock. I was up and I was checking my email, and I never do this. For some reason on my iPad, I go on the news feed, and there were like 4 or 5 stories about crazy clowns or scary clowns. I mean, there were 2 guys from Ohio that there was a story about that said they had actually been chased through the woods by a killer clown. There was a story about Steven Spielberg, how clowns are actually one of his phobias. You know, with Halloween coming up here, he's integrated them apparently into a couple of books. I'm not a big Stephen King fan. But my question to you guys is, have you ever actually seen a clown gone mad?
I never had Jay Paul or Rocky.
What's the deal with all this talk about killer clowns? Where the heck is that coming from?
I don't know what the obsession with doing it is, because in the little bitty town of Chula, Mississippi, there was one back at the beginning of the summer, and he was really freaking a lot of people out. You know, it was almost. He was just poking his head around the tree, and then he was gone. See, I saw the movie It, and that's mm-hmm. kind of where the clown obsession comes from, is the movie It. It was one of the only few movies that I watched from Stephen King. I never was a huge horror films guy. Just wasn't my cup of tea. I don't want to see anything like that. But anyway, I saw the movie It, and it gave me a phobia of clowns. I tell you what, if I was in the woods and had a clown with a knife chasing me, it freaked me out. You better believe I'm shooting.
Yeah, same here.
Have you heard anything about this stuff, Roland?
Yes, I have, and I just haven't really paid any great attention to it, you know, but lately – you know, I've been reading the paper when I get up, and you've been seeing a bunch of it lately.
Yeah, and you know, for me, it would not have really caught my eye, probably, because I've never seen a clown gone crazy. I think very few people in this world have. But here in my hometown of Dyersburg, last week they actually put one of the schools on lockdown because not one, but it wasn't a hoax, not one, but several people saw someone dressed up in a scary clown costume on the property adjacent to the school, or maybe even on the school grounds. Unfortunately, police never found him. Now, police were called. But, you know, I've always seen headlines like the one today and thought that's ridiculous crap. But then right here in Dyersburg, you know, if you take a look at the on social media or the news feed, you'll see it happened here just a few days ago. And I wonder, I mean, I'm sure that was probably not someone who was there, you know. Hell, if he'd been out there to kill people, he'd have probably done it already, you know. I think it was probably more of a scare thing. But why on earth would someone even, I mean, you're risking time in prison. Why would you even do that?
I'll tell you this. In fact, I'm not going to answer your question, but let me go back to, I remember when I was in college, I went and saw the movie Scream. Do you remember the movie Scream? It was,
yes.
It was something that could happen in real life. It was real guys. It wasn't like Jason or Freddy or whatever, you know, something fake that could happen. This was like real life. So I got talked into going to see the movie Scream. And I'm going to tell you something. It freaked me out. That movie, you know, the guys dressing up and they were talking through the voice changers. Hello, Sydney, or whatever it was. Sydney, Cindy. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I do, and Rocky, it kind of scares me that you can do that so well.
Yeah. And look, and they, my roommates in college, they knew that it freaked me out, so they messed with me all the time about that crazy movie. Even the girls around the apartments where we lived, you know, it freaked me out. So I, as far as horror or, you know, I may think something crazy. I'll leave a light on, but I have a gun beside my bed, so I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, I'd like to see a killer. I'd like to see a killer clown come somewhere close to the duck blind.
Yeah, he'd be in serious trouble.
All right. Well, I saw those headlines this morning. Rocky, you're always bringing some strange stuff to the table. So, Roland, I apologize, but I wanted to.
I'm not a problem. I ignored it.
No, well, let's talk duck hunting.
Rocky and I are both going to be sleeping with a dead gum light on tonight, doggone. Melanie and Roy Ann are going to be, cut that light out.
Or you're going to have a night light on.
Exactly. Rocky sleeps with a night light and a teddy as it is.
Hey, no.
Hey, at least he sleeps with a teddy and not wearing one, as far as I know.
Uh-oh.
Oh, gosh.
All right, man. Let's get some duck hunt talk. All right, Roland. So, you know, I know that you're and we've had a couple of cut down guys on the podcast. But, you know, tell me a little bit about your take on cut down calls and, you know, why you think that they are so effective.
Well, the reason why, you know, I think a cut down call is effective is it sounds different than a regular J-frame duck call, because, you know, you're just putting that burst of air, you know, making that call bark, which if you step back and you're in the woods and you hear that boss in, you know, she'll hit that lick, bang, 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 bang. You know, just four or five licks, you know, hard licks on it. And, you know, it sounds like a real duck to me, you know. And then, that's why I think a cut down is more effective. You know, it's more of an aggressive call, you know, than your regular J frame.
Roland, let me ask you this. I just actually won one a couple of months ago at a call night, at Reggio call night back in June. David St. John brought some down, and I'm just going to tell you, I've been using a regular duck call my whole life. What, as far as from a technique standpoint, you know, because there's a lot of people that are listening to this podcast that have never seen a cut down call, or maybe buying their first cut down call, or may have be like me, just won their first cut down call. But what's the difference from a technique standpoint about blowing a cut down call? From a beginner, how would you teach a beginner to blow a cut down call?
Well, blowing a cut down is kind of different than blowing a J frame, and in the way you put your air, you know, what you want to do is you want to put a burst of air in it, you know. And when you put that burst of air, like I said, most of the time a cut down is a little bit harder to blow than a regular J frame duck call, so it takes a little bit more air pressure, and you know, you have no hold to the call, so it's a lot more blunt sound. So, you know, you're wanting to put a burst of air in it, you know. And when you blow into it, you know, and you can still see that word, you know, quack, wit, or whatever most people use to put into their call. It's just a different way of putting your air in than a traditional J-frame style call.
Well, Roland, let me ask you this. When you're talking about presenting air to the call, is it you say a bigger burst of air? Is it still the same mixture from your diaphragm and your mouth with the air?
Yeah, pretty much the same way. It is just the way you put it into the call. You know, you want that burst instead of a hot flow. And like I said, this is my opinion, so you know, everybody's one's different. You know, than what mine is. You know, I said I haven't been blowing a cut down all my life like some people have. You know, cut downs kind of came in a latter part of it. You know, growing up in South Louisiana, you know, cut downs wasn't really a big deal back down here until I started hunting up in Arkansas, and then you know I got fascinated with the cut downs, and then I just started you know practicing and learning how to blow them more.
You wouldn't happen to have one there with you today, would you?
Oh, no, I don't believe I have one with me.
Oh,
no,
God.
I'm looking in my bag. No, I don't have one with me to demonstrate. I'd love to do that on a podcast, you know, demonstrate to y'all.
Oh,
hey, Roland,
we gotta have you come back just for that.
Hey, Roland, you know, one of the the way that you and I became friends, and following each other on social media was, I guess you were friends with T.J. Mallett.
Yes, sir.
You've been friends with him
TJ.
For a while, and T.J.'s been blowing in these cut-down call competitions. Let me ask you this, talking about the cut-down call competitions, what's the difference in that calling competition versus a regular, and how fast is that growing?
You know, the cut down contest scene, you know, it's growing rapidly. I mean, it just burst onto the scene, and it's getting very popular. You know, there's a big one coming up this weekend, you know, at Honey Break. And, you know, it should really be a good contest. And I mean, you're getting 30 and 40 cut down callers from quite a few different states, you know, that are coming into this. You know, it just grew pretty quick, and I see a lot more cut down contests in the near future.
Well, hey Roland, when you're talking about cut down calls, and I know this is, you never ask a one word answer, but they make that big of a difference in the woods.
On certain days, they do. You know, I pretty much blow when I'm in the woods. I pretty much blow a cut down, you know, 99.9% of the time. There's only a 1% chance that I'm not, unless it's a real, you know, the ducks just don't want to respond to that type of aggressive calling. But I've never had a day yet, you know, where they didn't. You just have to, you know, tone it down a little bit and not call as loud. You know, the whole point of a cut down is, you know, was based upon hunting public ground, you know, trying to get your ducks down in that hole as fast as you can. And, you know, that's where the whole, you know, cut down deal came from. You know, you out there in that hole and you want to put them ducks down as quick as possible before they swing over the next group of hunters and they take your ducks.
Yeah. You know, Jimbo, of course you're an R&T guy. You know, that was the whole basis behind the Mondo. You know, Jimbo Ronk was done so much on public and stuff and loves the cut down call. And, you know, now that you guys at R&T have in the Mondo, you know, a new twist on that really, really works. You blow a Mondo?
Yes, yes sir. I blow a Mondo, and last year came out with the Mondo Lite, which is a kind of a user-friendly version of the original Mondo, and it's a lot more where more. Actually, people that doesn't really know how to run a cut down can use them, and they're really good. Actually, I've been blowing one for a while now, and I kind of like the Mondo Lite, you know, versus the the stock Mondo, you know, the original Mondo that they came out with. It's a little bit more easier to, you know, to chatter on and to do your feeds and to work on your greetings and stuff like that. So I'd just rather the Mondo Light.
I've got to try that call because, you know, I've been blowing the duck call literally for 40 years. And, you know, as a guide and professional hunter, I'm a pretty decent caller. I am by no means. You'll never see me on Main Street in Stuttgart after Thanksgiving, that's for sure. I'm not in your league. But I'm a pretty skilled duck caller. But I'll tell you what, Roland, I really, really struggle when it comes to blowing a cut-down call. It's just something that I've tried. I love the sound. I haven't been able to master. So I'm looking forward to seeing if I can't get my hands on a Mondo Light and give that a try.
I think you'll like the Mondo Light, J. Paul, because it's a lot more traditional, you know, J-frame style. Just by the way, it's cut a little bit different than that stock Mondo. And it should be a lot easier for you to, you know, use your notes and to cut your licks on it than the regular Mondo. So you should adjust to that one very well.
Well, I'm definitely going to give it a try. And by the way, I've enjoyed talking about the duck call and want to remind everybody out there that this part of our podcast has been brought to you by Hardcore Brands and Hardcore Decoys. Hardcore's, they're the makers of some of the most innovative and well-designed waterfowling products on the market. They know it's not easy being hardcore. We really appreciate their support there. And before we go on to duck hunting, I think, Rocky, you got one more calling question for Roland?
Yeah, Roland, I want to ask you this. You know, I want to go back to what I touched on at the very, very beginning. You know, pretend like this is a class for dummies because you've got one in the class with you right now, okay? But what when you talk about the term barking, and, you know, I've talked to different people about this, but for the listeners that's listening, explain the difference, but, you know, explain what the term barking with the cut-down call is.
Well, the term barking, you know, in a cut-down is, you know, you're blowing them four or five licks, you know, bang, 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 bang. You know, you're kind of like you're barking at them ducks. A lot of times when I'm hunting with my group of guys, you know, and we'll start just, you know, barking at them, just hitting them four or five hard licks. Bang, 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 bang. You know, trying to break them high ducks. And the term barking, I guess, came from because it sounds like, you know, a dog barking the way you're hitting them four or five licks. And I wish I had a call, Rocky, to show you what I'm talking about.
Well, Roland, let me ask you this. Do you think that the success of the cut down call is because everybody else in the woods is blowing, you know, just the regular duck call, and you are just standing out and unique? You think that that's the answer to why, you know, you're having more success with that cut down call?
Yes, it's just something different, Rocky. You know, ducks have been hearing duck calls since they left Canada. So anytime, you know, you got a new bag of tricks, you know, on them ducks, it'll definitely help you out. And you know, using a cut down over a traditional style J frame is definitely, you know, puts more ducks in my bag.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, you know, you think about anything that you can do to differentiate is definitely gonna be helpful. Well, moving away from duck calling just a little bit, I've got a question for you. I saw on your personal Facebook page yesterday or day before, you made a comment that you're starting to see some speckle belly geese now. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. The speckle belly showed up last Tuesday up around Stuttgart, you know, with this nice cool front we had. And they've been showing up, you know, in pretty good numbers every day.
What else are you seeing?
We've seen some pintails, some gadwalls, a lot of blue-winged teal around. You know, no mallard showed up yet, but I got a feeling that when we get this next full moon this month, mallards will probably show up, and they might have some, you know, showed up today. I'm back, like I said, I'm back in Louisiana, so I don't really know if any showed up, but usually they start showing up toward the end of the month.
Well, I was just going to say, your duck season in Louisiana actually opens a little bit earlier than duck season in Arkansas, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. Coastal zone opens up November 12th. So I get a little week jump before I get Arkansas. And actually, our speckle belly season in Louisiana opens up November 5th. So I get to speckle belly hunt early.
Wow, I'm sure you're glad to be seeing some of them.
Yes, the latter part of September, actually, we had a guy out in southwest Louisiana seen five specks in Louisiana already. So it looks like there's a few speckle bellies, you know, came here kind of early this year.
Roland, let me ask you this. Being in Louisiana your whole life, now when I was a kid, Louisiana was one of the best states that you could duck hunt in. And over that period of time, you know, 20, 30 years now, duck hunting has changed extremely. It's extremely different than, you know, what it was 30 years ago. What do you think has changed duck hunting the most in Louisiana? Why has it changed that much?
You know, I put it into three parts, Rocky. First is the environment. The environment in Louisiana has changed over the last 20, 30 years. You know, down here, you know, a lot of coastal erosion with the water. You know, it's taking over land. And then plus, back in the late 80s, we had evasive aquatic vegetation that took over a lot of the swamp lands down here. You know, growing up as a kid here, where I live at was the mallard mecca. You know, it was nothing to go shoot back then. You know, when I started hunting, it was points. Then we went to the three duck in 30 days, and it was nothing to go shoot my three mallards with my 410 crack barrel, you know, in no time at all. And looking back at it, I haven't shot a duck in them woods in 20 years. So that's one part of it, you know, is environment. And second part is a lot of things have changed up north. More people, you know, I think are managing more for ducks and this non-till practice and stuff like that. And the weather, you know, has a lot to do with it, I think so, too, you know. And then the third part is hunting pressure. You know, there's a lot more people hunting today than what there was, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah, and, you know, Roland, we've talked a little bit about no-till farming and how it affects the birds. But, man, I think that you have some spot on observations there. That's really, really good stuff.
Yeah, Jay Paul, and you know, growing up, like I said, growing up here, man, it was just a mecca here. You know, we can shoot ducks in the morning, you know, and catch redfish, you know, in the afternoon, man. It was just a smorgasbord of and that's why, you know, we're the you know, sportsman's paradise down here. And I'm hoping one day that the duck hunting, you know, does improve down here. And like, there are places here that you can still kill a lot of ducks. You know, you just have to do your, you know, scouting and travel a bunch to do it.
Hey, Roland, how long have you been guiding up around Stuttgart now? How many years?
I've been guiding in Stuttgart for the last 6 years now. But, I mean, I've been guiding in Louisiana for, you know, 15 years altogether. So
right.
I've had my own business down here in Louisiana. And about 6 years ago, I met my partner, Chad Lloyd. And so I just moved my operation up to Stuttgart. You know, I enjoyed it up there. I've always, it's been a dream of mine to guide and to hunt in the state of Arkansas.
Let me ask you about last season, Roland. Last season was a bust for a lot of guys that's listening to this podcast. If you had to rank last season, you know, in the 6 years that you've been there, would you call it the worst and why?
I wouldn't call it the worst, Rocky, you know, but it's not my best. You know, I mean, last year was just, if I had to put it on a scale of 1 to 10, it was a 5. You know, we had a lot of water, and that mild winter, you know, spread the ducks pretty far and few in between. And luckily for us, you know, there's tons of speckle bellies around the Stuttgart area, and you know, we capitalized on that, and you know, the geese kind of saved, you know, a lot of our hunts, and we were doing good. You know, we were shooting, you know, 15 to 20 ducks, you know, a day, a group, but it just wasn't what we were used to.
Right. As long as I can remember, and I myself keeping records, and because I keep records of the rivers that around here that dump into the Mississippi River, but I've never seen overall in the South the Mississippi River, because it affects all the rivers that dump into it, but that high during the wintertime. That Mississippi River, I mean, it was outside of its natural banks, almost to the emergency levees. And, you know, I talk about this a lot and try to tell people, if they understood how much land was inside those emergency levees, and when that Mississippi River gets out and it floods that, that's a lot of food for ducks that never have to leave the inside part of that Mississippi River levee.
And the White River, you know, where we hunt at in the woods, you know, usually where I hunt at, Rocky, in the woods, it's usually knee-deep to ankle-deep water. And this past season, the White River got up to 33 feet in Clarendon. So that puts 14 to 15 foot of water in my timber hole.
Holy moly. Wow.
Most water I ever seen, you know, down there. It flooded the whole 1,200-acre timber tract that we hunt on the White River. So it just put water where there was never water at before. And, you know, it spreaded the ducks out tremendously, you know. And if the weather conditions were right, you know, we kill. I mean, like I said, I was averaging anywhere from 12 to 20, you know, mallards a morning. And then some, you know, I had a couple of days where if the weather wasn't right, you know, it was kind of slow. So, but that water just spread them ducks out, I mean, everywhere. And, you know, the ducks that we did have in Arkansas, you know, they would just spread out a lot. And we were getting the same reports from all the way up to, you know, Jonesboro and Pocahontas up there, you know, all the way up to the Missouri line. Same thing. Black River was high. Just lots of water.
Well, from the way it looks right now, Roland, I mean, what are the water conditions over around Stuttgart and, you know, the areas that you hunt? I mean, is it low right now?
Yeah,
is it pretty average for...
It's
for this time of the year?
Yeah, it's about average. The White River's still falling. It's 17 and falling, so it'll probably get to normal if we don't get a lot of rainfall between now and duck season. You know, it's pretty dusty up there and pretty dry, so a lot of the farmers, you know, getting all their rice and soybean out the fields cutting corn. But water level is just about where we need it to be. Our little slough, our buck brush slough that we hunt, you know, it's about knee-deep, which is about perfect for where we want it. Hopefully it stays like that and then we don't have a wet winter.
I've got a little surprise that I'm going to announce while you're on the air with us. Roland is actually, for the DuckSouth.com users and the future listeners of the Guides Roundtable, Roland is going to be our field expert in Stuttgart. And we're going to be talking to Roland a couple of times a week for 3 or 4 minutes as he's scouting. And Roland's going to report back to us a couple times a week and tell us what the migration is doing over around Stuttgart. And Roland, I'll say it on the air, man, I appreciate you doing that. I appreciate you being here today. I look forward to talking to you more and more this winter. And, you know, guys, be prepared to hear Roland's voice a lot, because I know that you guys will be paying attention to that Stuttgart report, since it's the duck hunting capital of the world.
No, I was just laughing. There are some people, you know, down around Gaydon that would argue with Rocky, I believe, about that. You know, it's funny because you go to Stuttgart and there's a sign that says the duck hunting capital of the world. You go to Gaydon and there's a sign that says the duck hunting capital of the world. You go to Yuba City, California, and there is a sign that says the duck hunting capital of the world. So there are probably a few folks listening that would dispute that, but without a doubt, Stuttgart, you know, is synonymous with duck hunting. And I think having you as our man on the street there, or man on the ground, I should say, is going to be awesome. And
well,
of course, you know, having that Cajun accent on here on a regular basis, that can't be a bad thing either.
But it's definitely an honor, Rocky and Jay Paul, for y'all, you know, letting me come on here and do this. You know, I work hard at it. You know, I've been in this for a long time, and, you know, it's finally getting to where, you know, a lot of people know me, and hopefully it's a good thing that people know me and not a bad. So I try to keep a, you know, a good reputation.
Well, let me tell you have a great one out there. And I want to share with all of our listeners, too. If you want to do a guided duck hunt, in Stuttgart, you know, and this should be everybody's bucket list. If you haven't done it, even if you hunt in the Delta and your hunting is fantastic, you need to get up there on the Grand Prairie at some time. And there's no person to do it better with than Roland and his partner. You can find them on Facebook, on social media. Arkansas Duck Guide Service is their Facebook page. The rates, I got to put a plug in here for you, Roland. Your rates are outstanding. I think it's $250 per person per day, including lodging. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And you've also got available, and I know you don't recommend this, but if a guy wants to do a self-guided hunt, you have blinds that you'll rent the whole blind self-guided for $550 a day.
Yes, sir.
Well, both of those are a heck of a deal. You know, Arkansas Duck Guide Service on Facebook. Roland also has his own personal Facebook page, which I think it's funny because I was looking on here. I remembered seeing it just a few days ago. You actually had a big old pot of squirrels on your Facebook page.
Yes, sir, J. Paul. So, you know, my father, he loves squirrels. You know, he's the one that's got me started in all this, you know, hunting. And he loves squirrels. And every year, opening day, I haven't missed one since I was a kid. That's my deal. I go out in the morning, I shoot 8 squirrels for him. We clean them, and me and him eat them. For, you know, he'll cook them up for me, and we'll have a few cold ones, and we'll eat some squirrels for dinner.
That's awesome. I knew I'd seen that on there. Last, besides the Facebook page, social media, if someone wanted to get in touch with you and book a hunt, what are some other ways they could do it?
They can contact me, Jay Paul, at 985-414-4997 or Chad Lloyd, 870-830-7430. Or you can look us up on our webpage at www.arkansasduckandgoosehunts.com. And if you go to the webpage, you're going to find all the information on what you need as far as what our lodging looks like, all our rates, and pretty much everything you need to know about, you know, hunting in Arkansas and the Stuttgart area.
That's awesome. Well, I hope everybody will take advantage of that. Roland's a great guy, and really excited to have him on the On the X podcast, powered by Duck South, of course, presented by Bear Animal Healthcare, makers of Advantage Multi, the only heartworm preventive proven to be 100% effective against all strains of heartworms. And Roland, we really enjoyed it. That's about all I got today. Rocky, your closing thoughts.
Man, all this talk about food, and I hadn't eaten lunch. I'm actually on my way to write and film about the next top duck dive for DuckSouth.com. And man, y'all have got my stomach rumbling listening to all of this. Whew.
So, well, which direction are you headed?
It's a surprise this week. It is a little known place. I mean, really and truly, there's not a lot of people that's going to know about this place, but I hope that they frequent it after I finish it up. It's a little bit of a surprise. I'll tell you this, their specialty is donuts and hot tamales.
Wow.
Oh, my. I know. That'll be a great one. I'm hungry, too. Roland, how about you, man? Any final thoughts before we close it out?
Hey, Paul, Rocky, I appreciate y'all letting me come on here and talk to y'all. And getting close to duck and speckle belly season, y'all get fired up, and I'll hopefully talk to y'all later.
You're right about that. It's getting close, man. Nice, cool mornings. A couple of days ago, I heard some snow geese for the first time this year, and it really, really was exciting to me. Not that I care so much for the snow geese, just to know that some of the migration has begun. And a lot of good information there from you, Roland. We appreciate that. Got a great recipe out of it. Guys, I really hope that all of you out there listening have enjoyed this edition of the On X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.